Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for your Monday morning health checkup. The chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital is Dr. Thomas Moran. Doctor, good morning. What's going on with the measles? Is this because not enough kids have been vaccinated?
Yeah, good morning, Bob. Measles is kind of making an outbreak again. The last time we saw measles cases this high was back in 2019 when we had an outbreak in New York. And yes, it's because of lower vaccination rates. This year we have about 1,200 cases of measles in across about 38 states, but the majority of the cases have come from a region of Southwest Texas where the vaccination rate for measles was low, like 82%. 92% of that 1,200 cases of measles was people who were not vaccinated. The CDC is looking at this as one of those things. Is this a kind of a warning sign of, are there other vaccinations that we're not getting that we could see outbreaks in other diseases also? Overall, we need about a 95% vaccination rate for the kind of keeping at bay the illnesses that the viruses that could cause illness. Measles is a viral illness, but one out of every 1,000 kids who get measles does die from it. We had two kids that died overall out of this 1,200 and one adult, and all of them weren't vaccinated.
With the summer travel season now, is it likely that this has not peaked yet?
Yeah, there's a couple reasons that, you know, with people traveling, not only within the United States, but outside the United States. There's also an increase of global rise of measles, mostly in travel a lot. And what happens is if you have an area of our country that has low vaccination rates and you get someone that comes in with measles, it's a highly contagious disease that is easy to spread from person to person. And we need to kind of increase that vaccination rate to keep up above 95% of the population vaccinated to keep measles at bay. Think of it as your immune seatbelt is the way you have to think about it.
Mm. Let's get into some of these new numbers now from the CDC on prediabetes. This is kind of alarming. What is it? 1 in 3 teens have this condition now?
Yeah. 12 to 17-year-olds, 1 out of 3 of them, have a kind of the situation where they're set to probably end up developing prediabetes. Prediabetes is where you have a higher than normal blood sugar. And it's a warning sign that you could end up developing diabetes. So those individuals that have low physical activity, obesity, parents that have diabetes, type 2 diabetes to begin with, are more at risk to develop diabetes going forward. When you think about this, you know, 1 in 3, that's about 8 million people having pre-diabetes. And diabetes, development of diabetes is one of those things that creates problems for you as you age and get older because you have other diseases, chronic diseases that can develop because of it.
Yeah, I know losing weight helps, but it's also about your exercise habits and also what you're eating, obviously, right?
Yeah. Yep. Like we said before many times, food is medicine. What we put in our bodies really matters. There's in our ton of processed foods, a lot of added sugars that are there. And those are the things that put us at more at risk of developing as we age. And exercise plays a huge role. And you think of exercise as one of those things is you need to do it now. Kind of like your health retirement plan. You need to stay active when you're young, put the work in so you don't develop those chronic diseases because your function as you get older benefits from it and you're more likely to live a healthier lifespan and be active when you're older as long as you put the work in when you're younger.
More health briefs now. Dr. Thomas Moran is the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. He's with us this week. Doctor, let's talk about this new study about antidepressants. What did we learn from this?
Yeah, they were looking at, there was a study back in 2019 that was looking at people who've been on antidepressants and stop them. if they get withdrawal symptoms. And they were saying more than half of the people that have been on antidepressants that stopped ended up getting some of the withdrawal symptoms. A new study that was recently done looking at, you know, all the studies that have been done tried to really kind of organize this out is, are these individuals who are stopping it having true withdrawal or just having some symptoms that could be associated with stopping any medication? And there's kind of a debate that's going on. Here's the way you have to think about it. If you need medications to help with your mental health, you need to go on those medications. Should really not worry about the ability, am I going to have withdrawal symptoms or not after I stop them? Because overall, we want to get your mental health better. If you do develop the withdrawal symptoms after your physician thinks that you could stop the medications, you have to give it a little bit of time. Your physician would work with you on kind of tapering those doses to limit that withdrawal symptoms that you do have. And over time, most of the people stopping the medications, those symptoms of headache, dizziness, a little bit of sleep disturbance usually go away. And a recent study that went through looked at all of this, and there's some comparison of even people taking a placebo medication had some of these symptoms of headache, dizziness, and sleep disturbance. So, you know, these studies come out and we get into this controversy and of should I or should I not even go on a medication because I might have withdrawal symptoms. I think the way we should look at it globally is if you need something, a medication, a treatment to help you currently with your condition that's affected, you need to trust your doc and go on that medication or get that treatment, and we can deal with the after effects if and when we need to take you off of that medication.
I guess the takeaway from this would be don't stop taking the antidepressants without consulting with an expert. And I guess that would go for any medication you're taking.
Any medicine.
For any condition, right?
Right. It's, you know, people think, it's like, am I going to be on this medication for the rest of my life? And sometimes the answer is yes, you're going to be on that. There are some medications in mental health that could be tapered or changed as your condition changes, but that's your doc changing your treatment plan, and medication is part of your treatment plan.
Let's talk about what a lot of people think about, especially in the morning, exercise and the age-old question, how much do I need? And the World Health Organization still sticking to this 150 minutes of exercise per week being a minimum. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, when you look across the board, there's more than 50% of the world population is obese. One third of the world population is really inactive, meaning they don't meet that basic requirement of about 150 minutes a week. When you think about it, it's 30 minutes of walking, you know, five times a week to get through to get that 150 minutes. It's not talking about, you know, extreme exercise. So how do you do this? One of the best exercises is an exercise that you like and you will stick with. So there's some research out there comparing your personality type to the type of exercise. I would say that the best way you look at it is try different exercises that are out there, things that you would like to do and you know you can continue doing it. Because the best way of getting your activity level up is doing it on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing at this study that found extroverts tend to enjoy higher intensity training. In my case, my wife would certainly fall into that category. But trying a workout that fits your personality type, I mean, is there really anything to that?
Well, you know, there's some people that like, I need a one-on-one personal trainer to motivate me and get me going. There are others that can exercise by themselves, and others that like the socialness of exercise and getting a group. So you have the cycling classes or yoga where you're going together and meeting with people. I think the basis of this whole thing is try different exercises so you know what fits you and you can enjoy doing it. Exercise itself is work, right? It takes work to go through doing exercise. You mm-hmm. got to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And if you could like what it is and you like the environment and what you're doing, your likelihood of sticking with it stays with you, and you get the benefit of the exercise.
Yeah, and when it's the last thing you feel like doing, it's usually the first thing you should do that you
right.
really need it. And finally, let's talk about bread, because there's been a lot about this lately. I'm a breadaholic, and my wife keeps pointing to the sugar in bread. And then you have the people who go to Europe, and they're eating all this bread in Italy, and they claim that it's different there, and it's healthier there. Well, what's the bottom line on bread?
So it's back to, I think, the basis of processed foods. So if you look at your pick up a loaf of bread and you look at the label and there is more than four ingredients in that, it's more than likely highly processed. There's a lot of additives we put into it. So take the flour. Flour gets processed and bleached and bromated and everything that goes into it. If you get a whole grain flour that doesn't have a lot of processing to it, it's a better basic, because you think about your bread is basically four ingredients. It's flour, water, yeast, and salt. It's mostly what it is. If you go beyond that, it's getting more and more processed. And the more processed food we have, the higher we get in the glycemic index of that bread. So what makes your glucose spike after you have it and then crash? So more basic breads, a little bit complex grains that are in it, the better overall the bread is for you. But again, you got to do it in moderation. Everybody loves nice bread. Some like crusty, some like soft, but it's not a, it's a moderation of eating it and enjoy it, but not too much of it.
Yeah, there was a podcast or two about breads being unhealthy, contributing to inflammation. What I want to know is, should I get whole wheat or sourdough? Which is the better one for your health?
I think if you like the taste of sourdough, it's a little bit more tangy. The thing with sourdough that people have to understand, it's flour, water, and a little bit of salt that you allow the natural yeast and bacteria that are in there to start growing. They process some of those sugars overall and digest them, which gives that tanginess flavor to the sourdough and lowers its overall glycemic index. But if you get a really hearty wheat bread that's there, it's also going to have a little bit lower glycemic index. I would say the better you get to the basics of bread, or you can make bread yourself, the more you enjoy it. And I would say it's a little bit healthier overall than getting processed bread from the store.
It's come to this. You have to consult your doctor before you buy a loaf of bread. Dr. Thomas Moran, thank you. Have a good day.
Take care, Bob.
You as well.